Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Today is the first day of winter, and you know that means iced over windshields and slick roads. And looking at the forecast, depending on where you are tomorrow, could be an interesting commute. And you'll be sure to use your defroster. Well, here to prepare your vehicle for the winter season is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car questions right now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Every time Gordon's on this program, it is a popular one. So my advice, my earnest advice, is to call early, 800-348-2551. By the end of the show, you may not get in. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke is here. We begin after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're talking automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, beginning at Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany in 1979. He earned his associate's degree in automotive mechanics from Hudson Valley Community College and a bachelor's degree in vocational technical education at the State University of New York's College of Technology in Utica. Prior to starting his own business in Hoosick Falls, Gordon worked as an automotive tech in Massachusetts. Where was it?
Yeah, Natick, Mass.
Natick, Mass. That's right. And always great to have Gordon Fricke on this program. Welcome back, sir. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We will get a few emails in, however, and if you have one, it's voxpop@wamc.org. Some yucky weather on the way tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about. So let's hope everybody's ready for the commute and has all their tires and automotive things in order.
Yeah. Well, should I deflate my tires?
You know, years ago, there was a thought that if you took some air out of the tires, it'd squish the tread out and give you a little better traction. And, you know, it may have been true in the days of bias-ply tires and a lot of cars that were very bad in the snow.
Yeah.
Rear-wheel drive, big engines in the front.
Yep.
Today's tires, of course, everything's radials and all season predominantly. And a lot of people still put winter tires on. So I don't know if that lower inflation does much good anymore.
Can it hurt or will it make it worse?
Well, you don't want to go too low because then you affect handling, stopping, steering, and all this. I think keep it to the spec.
Proper inflation.
Good call, Ray.
All right, sir. Our number is 800-348-2551. The lines are loading up, Gordon, so let's get right to the phones. And Frank and Latham. Frank.
Hey, Ray, Gordon, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question, not necessarily winter related, except that I don't want to be stranded on the side of the road in the winter. Mm. So we've got a 2008 Subaru Legacy. It just turned 100,000, and I'm a Volkswagen guy. Subarus are foreign to me. Looking to see what kind of preventative maintenance I should be doing at 100,000. I've read head gasket. I've read timing. I've read a lot of different things. Looking for your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Do they have a timing belt on that?
Yeah. His year and model does.
It does, yep.
Yeah, and now that particular timing belt is due at about 105,000 miles, and there's also a time factor. So it looks like you're really approaching that just about now.
And that's important.
It is. It's very important. And it ties together a few other maintenance items at the same time. The water pump generally would be good to replace at that time because you're torn down to that point, and the water pump carries the timing belt. It acts as a pulley for the belt as well as the belt turning it. So you're on the brink of the timing belt service. Also,
for sure. So that said, as far as the head gasket, I'm reading that the head gasket in this generation of the 2.5 engine is certainly an issue, but it's not really the same service. It doesn't really impact the same things as the timing service. So I'm wondering, is it worth splurging, let's say, on that service,
right,
or waiting till it's an issue?
Well, they don't all develop that problem at this stage of their lives, but we certainly see a lot of head gaskets leaking. Oil is the issue on this vintage car. Oil leaks around the head gaskets. Fairly substantial job. These cars are very durable, and they're worth doing this maintenance to. Here's the thing tying the two jobs together. If you, let's say the head gaskets are just barely seeping now and you decide not to do it, but you do the timing belt job, 6 months, a year, year and a half, 2 years down the road, now they're leaking badly. They're getting all over the exhaust. You can't live with it. It's leaking too badly, or it leaks so bad you can't drive it anymore. The teardown requires taking all that timing stuff off that you just put on the car previously.
It does. Okay. So, that was a question I had. Yeah. My understanding was it was almost unrelated except for just tearing the ancillary stuff off.
Yep. No, it goes completely together in terms of labor. What I would do is this. Get it in and see what kind of shape those head gaskets are in. If they are absolutely spotless, you may not want to do them now. If they are in the stages of developing leaks, get an estimate, think about doing it. Once it's done and over with, you'll get another $105,000 out of the car. And at that point, you may not have it anymore or whatever.
Okay.
But yeah, they do go together.
All right, Frank, thanks a lot for the call. As a practical matter, if you know that the 2008 Legacy, let's say, starts leaking, the head gaskets start going, could you just put some stop leak in early and try to stave off that issue?
No effect on it whatsoever.
Really?
I did some experimenting early on those cars because the first ones had head gasket issues leaking coolant.
Right.
And Subaru provided a cooling system conditioner that you poured in there, and the stuff really did work on external seepage and leaks.
Yep.
So they solved that problem, and then, bang, here comes the next problem. They're now leaking oil instead of coolant.
Yeah.
So I tried some of the remedies that you can buy at the auto parts stores just as an experiment, and on a couple of cars, it didn't do any good.
So you need to replace the head gaskets.
Yeah.
On some cars, as I well know, that's a very expensive job.
Well, in the case of the car that comes to your mind, North Star V8 disaster. Sometimes the head gasket job couldn't even be accomplished because the studs would come out of the engine block and you'd have a complete mess.
Right.
But these Subarus are not a bad job. They're not a bad car to do this on.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, let's go over to line two and Cindy and Hunter. Cindy, you're on.
Hi, I have a 2003 Honda Element. And when I accelerate, the transmission will catch and kind of make a bang, and after that it's okay. I can avoid the issue by accelerating hard. Any ideas?
Has the transmission fluid been checked at all recently? The level
no,
of the
it
fluid.
Hasn't.
Okay. More than likely, you're a little bit low on automatic transmission fluid. And a lot of cars, if they're down a quart, you'll get this situation. I had one in, well, I get a lot of them in, but I had one in the other day that did a similar thing, and it was wouldn't go into reverse right away. Speed the engine up, bang, it goes in. Same thing forward. And the owner said it's been doing it for about 2 weeks. I brought it in. It needed 2 quarts.
Huh.
And that's pretty low.
Was there any damage done?
I don't think so, because I replenished the fluid, and I could not find any leaks prior. It didn't look wet anywhere. So I said, we got to keep a really close eye on this. But I drove it afterwards, and it responded great.
What would cause a vehicle to be down 2 quarts in transmission without a leak?
Well, they will naturally lose some fluid, believe it or not, from evaporation. And people say, what do you mean the oil's evaporating? But it will. Over, let's say, a 5-year period of time, nobody's checked the fluid in that car. It's been hot and cold 10,000 times. There is a vent. All transmissions have vents to let the vapors in and out as the transmission breathes and expands. And that fluid will slowly go away due to evaporation.
All right, Cindy, you want to follow up?
Yeah, do you recommend changing it out or just adding fluid?
Well, let's do this. If it's low, top it up, get it topped up, see what the condition of the fluid is. If it's horrible,
How do you tell if it's horrible?
That car, I believe, still has a dipstick, so you can pull the stick out and look at it. And then maybe first drive it for a day or two. If it all responds well, it might be time for a maintenance on that transmission.
All right, Cindy?
Okay.
Thanks a lot. And how does one know by looking at the dipstick if transmission fluid is good or bad?
Well, that's interesting because in most vehicles that had dipsticks, most don't anymore, but that fluid was almost always pink when it was new.
Mm-hmm.
And the darker it gets, the more depleted the fluid has become, and the more debris is being carried in the fluid, being suspended in the fluid. So darker color and smell, a burnt smell is not a good smell.
All right. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. Watercolors by Edith Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. George Heigl Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Mass Match, for over 15 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service, connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com. And from Nine Pin Cider, Albany, hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits, open Tuesday through Sunday. Wishing WAMC listeners happy holidays. NinePinCider.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Gordon Fricke, and we talk automotive maintenance and repair. And, oh, Gordon, what a popular show we have here. All the lines are on fire.
We're lit. I have to ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
I have been asked a few times if you have any say in the music that's played during our breaks.
Oh, I pick them.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's excellent because that answers the question. I've had a couple of people ask me that.
I pick the music for the Vox Pop programs, and the engineers on the round table, they get a lot of calls about the stuff that they pick.
Excellent.
Yeah, bumper music's good.
Good deal.
When you do a lot of talk, a little music break is nice.
Yeah.
All right, over to line four and Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on. Hello,
hey,
Mike.
How's it going? Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure, man, you're on.
All right, so I have a 95 GMC Sierra, old truck, old rusty truck. I have four-wheel drive in the truck, and the shifter of the four-wheel drive makes this awful grinding sound when we go to shift it. And the four-wheel drive works when it gets into four high or four low, but that sound is god-awful. Why is it making that sound?
Is it making the sound in the transition from two-wheel to four-wheel, or is it making the noise when you're in four-wheel and going?
No, it's a transition from two high to four low or four high.
Yeah. Do you feel that noise is up front near the front axle, the front end of the vehicle?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. And does that have a lever on the floor that you physically shifted into four-wheel drive?
Yes.
Yeah, that's old school, which is good. I mean, that's a good, solid system.
It's older.
Yeah, you're actually bringing various gears together in that transfer case by hand with that shift lever. And on that vintage truck, there was an actuator in the front axle that engaged your front drive shafts together with the propeller shaft from the transfer case. And there was an expanding piston in there that worked off of heat, and the old ones were very, very slow, and they would give you that grindy because it took them forever to engage. And
but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you wait it out and don't grind it to pieces, it'll still work. But they did improve that engagement mechanism to heat up and shift in way faster.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's something you want to even invest in, as long as yours will go into gear if you give it a minute. But I think that's the noise you're hearing.
Yeah.
It's probably not detrimental.
Yeah. All right, just wondering.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. The connection's not too good, so we'll let you go. And our number here is 800-348-2551. Steve in Averill Park got cut off earlier, so you're on, Steve.
Hey, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 1987 Ford Ranger with a 2.3-liter turbo diesel in it. And it's a total headache trying to find any parts for this at all, or even mechanics that could take a look at it. I was wondering if you knew of anyone in the Northeast area here that could supply parts or even take a look at the vehicle.
It's tough to do advertising. But,
yeah. What you have there is a very, very rare engine application in that truck.
Why?
That diesel engine never appeared. It must have been specially ordered. I never saw one. I knew they made them.
Really?
And I don't know if that was mainly for foreign markets, which I'm sure it was. I didn't even know if it was something that Canada was desiring, because being so cold in that vintage of diesels, they're hard starting engines.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
Yeah, I don't know, because I've never encountered one. Other than, you know, Google searching the internet, I can't remember who made the engine. It wasn't Ford.
Mitsubishi is the diesel.
That's who made the engine. Okay, yeah. I don't know. I think you may be in trouble, because the numbers were so extraordinarily low in the U.S.
In these days of the internet, I mean, you can get parts for a 1942 Studebaker,
yes,
right?
Yeah. If they exist somewhere, you can probably search them out. And that's what I would do.
I'm trying the internet. I guess I'll just have to dig a little deeper and, you know, keep working at it.
All right, Steve. But, good luck. Let us know if you have any luck. I mean, we'd love to hear a follow-up on that one. We appreciate the call. Over to Penny in Del Mar. Penny.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. With this cold weather, we all have our remotes, and we're starting the cars to warm them up.
Yeah.
I read someplace where with the new engines, that's detrimental to the engine. Is that true?
Well, not really so detrimental. It's the newer technology starts and runs and warms up nicer and faster than older school vehicles did. And the idea is, according to the car manufacturers and the EPA, they don't want the car to sit and idle for 20 minutes while you're in having another cup of coffee, so you can hop into a nice warm car, which was what I generally do. I don't know if I let it run 20 minutes or not, but it's more that you can let it start and run 30 seconds to a few minutes and drive off. It's easier on the environment. There's less pollution when it sits running, but you do get some deposits that end up in the crankcase from all that idling. So in the wintertime, it is if you are accustomed to letting your car warm up very frequently, you should think about changing your oil more often, because more deposits are going to end up in the crankcase.
Yeah.
You're going to have more unburnt gas and carbon and all the byproducts getting the oil dirtier faster. So that's the key. It's not going to kill the car, but I would ramp up the oil changes to what we call severe duty, and that is usually still about 3,000 miles in most manuals.
Oh, okay. So they automatically turn off, I think it's like after 8 minutes.
Oh, you mean really? you mean your auto starter part of it?
Yes.
Yeah, some of
them. You remotely start them, they turn off. So in other words, it would never go 20 minutes.
Yeah, some of those automatic starters will shut you down.
Oh, that's
exactly.
Pretty cool.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Penny, thanks a lot for the call and good luck. So an oil change maybe before winter begins is a good plan.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Of course, my car, I don't have a remote start. The heat starts blowing by the time I hit the parking lot at work.
My wife has a remote starter in the morning.
Yeah, my wife, too.
That's me.
Oh.
I run out and start the car.
That's good.
Yeah.
Let's go over to Emily in Shelburne Falls. Emily, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me all right?
Sure.
Okay. I have a Subaru 2015 hybrid, and I drove to Queens this past summer, and a nail appeared in one of the tires. So I couldn't just get it fixed. I had to replace the tire. And I just got snow tires, and the tire people said that you should have not been driving around with an oddball tire. Like I had Nokias or whatever for three of the tires and then an oddball tire. And they said it would be very, it's bad for the, something with the transmission or something with, so bad with mechanics.
Yeah,
sorry,
that's true. That sounds ridiculous. That sounds ridiculous.
No, it's true.
Really?
Here's the story.
Okay.
On all-wheel drive vehicles, particularly the Subaru that we're talking about right now, it's an automatic system. You don't shift or push any buttons. It's there all the time.
Right.
And it's sensing what wheel needs. If one wheel starts to slip, it'll give it some power.
Okay.
So that requires all the tires to be the same height, which means they all roll at the same speed. So let's say you have three tires on the car and you have a failure and you put a fourth oddball tire on, and that tire is an inch shorter than the other three.
Yeah.
The shorter tire is turning faster than the other three.
Interesting.
So the system says, wow, what's going on here? We got a tire that's slipping all the time, and it's diverting power to it. It's kind of confusing the all-wheel drive. It's confusing the ABS, stability control, the whole deal.
But when you replace a tire, 72 R16 or whatever, you're going to get the same size tire, right?
No. If you bought a Goodyear model XYZ, same number size as, let's say, a Firestone or a Uniroyal or a General, all three tires will probably stand at a different height than
you
each other.
You are kidding me.
Yes, it's not uniform.
Huh.
They go within specs of the numbers, but they'll vary in height. And the height's the killer here. So if she had three Nokians on there and put on a General, if that General was exactly the same height as the Nokians, there'd be no problem.
Interesting.
So the tire shop was saying you could develop problems if the tire didn't stand exactly the same height.
Emily, did you develop problems?
Well, this is what I want to ask next, is I did notice that I was beginning, I mean, it's 4 months later that happened, but I was beginning to notice recently, before getting the snows on, that my mileage wasn't as good for my gas. And then when I got my snows on, it was like something very different changed, and I was getting much better mileage again. Is that possible?
It is possible. It is may not be the entire cause, but it's possible.
Could she have done damage?
Probably not, but you certainly wouldn't want to just leave that one-odd tire on there indefinitely, because you could.
That's what they said.
Yeah, you could develop problems.
So here's my other question. I know that you probably don't want to answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Can I go and complain to Subaru, because they knew about this and they never said anything to me?
Are they the ones that put the odd tire on it?
No. When I went for, I had bought the car, I was under warranty still. So I just went for, some maintenance stuff recently, and they never.
You had the odd tire on when it went to the dealer for service. Is that
correct?
What you're saying? Yeah. Okay. Let's say they serviced the car and part of that maintenance was to check all your tire pressures, it would have been nice for somebody to notice the odd tire and at least ask the question. And I know we got a ton of calls behind you, but I have one quick comment.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm so glad you're on today, and both of you have a great holiday and Happy New Year.
I have one quick thing.
Yes.
And I've had to do this before for drivetrain problems. With the car in the air, we will take a tape measure, a flexible one like what Taylor's use.
Yeah.
Measure the circumference of each tire and see how close they are to each other. And if they're within a certain amount, they're all fine to stay on the car. So that odd tire could be fine. We don't know that.
Well, maybe. Well, Emily, have a great holiday, and thanks a lot. Happy New Year. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Tim in East Greenbush is next. Tim.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a simple question about changing oil. I change my own oil, and I always do it after I let the car run and come up to temperature, thinking that the oil is nice and thin and it'll drain very easily. Is that the preferred method, or should you do it when the engine is cold and all the oil is at the bottom of the pan?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Great
it
question.
Really is. So, in the Jiffy Lube world, people drive in off the street, the engine's piping hot, guy drains the oil in record time, throws the plug back in, it spins a filter on it, you're done. Porsche says to have the engine at operating temperature and remove the drain plug and let it drip for 20 minutes. Now, I don't know if that's at $150 an hour, but they're saying the oil is thin when it's warm and let it all drain out if possible. So the other school of thought is if the car's in your garage all night, all the oil's in the pan that's going to get there, and then you drain it out cold and let it all drip out cold. You can do it either way, but you should give it time to stop dripping. That way you're getting about all the oil you can out of the engine.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I do it. I usually get impatient, and I was like, all right, enough's enough, and I go on my way. So,
yeah.
All right, well, great. Thanks for taking my question.
Hey, Tim, thanks a lot, and happy holiday to you. Mark in Cooperstown. Mark, you're on.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
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 Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, thanks. I've got a weird thing with my GMC Sierra. It's an 08. Every time I turn it off and get out of the truck, I'll get a static shock, and sometimes it's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
It can be my shin on the rocker panel or my hand on the door. Doesn't matter what I'm wearing for shoes. It's just, and I don't think a passenger ever gets a shock. I've never heard of them complaining.
Yeah, that's not uncommon, particularly in the winter when the relative humidity is extremely low. Your truck, I'm sure, has cloth interior.
Yep.
So when you slide across the seat, you're developing static electricity, just like clothes in the dryer that didn't have a dryer sheet in it. And then when you get out, you step down to the ground and touch the truck, you ground the vehicle out, and you make the connection, and you get the spark.
It's
static electricity.
Is that simple?
Yeah, there's not much you can do about it either, other than maybe ground yourself out. When you get out of the vehicle, put your shoulder against the vehicle when you step down, and then you really won't feel it. But that little spark off the end of your finger.
It's a lot of voltage.
It is. It's unbelievable.
Not a lot of amperage.
No. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
High volts, low amps.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. And our engineer, when Mark said my shin hit, my engineer, Zach Malloy, said, looked at me in terror. No, he said, shin, Zach. It's okay. It's okay.
My ears perked up for a brief second, too, when he said that.
I heard it. It's all good.
I heard it.
All right. Thank you for all being careful of our FCC license. Let's go to Gregory in Warwick. Gregory, you're on.
Hi, Gordon. 2002 Ford Excursion, 7.3 diesel, automatic transmission, because they didn't offer the shift.
Right.
I just did my pre-winter oil change. This truck has always been run with synthetic oil, usually Mobil 1. All of a sudden, when you idle, it starts to smoke. And this is something that just developed out of the blue. No rhyme, no reason. Well, did something break, or did the truck change its drinking habits? What's going on?
So smoke out the tailpipe, I know, is what you're saying, correct?
Yeah, but of course it gets all over my girlfriend. I smell like exhaust.
What color is the smoke?
It's like white with a touch of gray.
All right. Sounds like a hair product.
Touch of gray?
Yeah, right.
Nice. Great for that song. Right? Yeah, there you go.
So here's the deal with smoke. Blue is burning oil. Black is burning fuel. And white is burning coolant or water.
Bye-bye head gasket, eh?
Now, that doesn't mean that you're drinking coolant necessarily. So that's why I asked you what color the smoke was. And this just started occurring. So you don't know if you're going through any fluids yet.
Exactly. Okay. I checked it. It never moves. Matter of fact, the radiator from the day I bought the truck, the same exact level has been in there.
Yep. I think what I would do is, and you haven't changed anything. You're still servicing it the same exact way, using the same oil.
Yeah, nothing on my end different, except I did put in mineral oil as opposed to the synthetic.
Just be sure that the oil you're selecting is for diesel engines.
Yeah, it's got to be CD,
right? It's got to be the diesel rating, because They make a lot of synthetic oils that are not diesel rated, and it will do. It'll wear a diesel out fast. It'll cause big trouble. You may. It just could be the switch of oil. It could be that that you're on different oil, and this engine
I went to the mineral because I had a ton of it in the garage. I used it on the motorcycles.
Yeah, it's possible that the change of oil has caused that condition, and you may want to just watch it for a bit, and if it calms down, you're all good. If it doesn't, go back to the oil you've been using, and again, just be sure it's diesel rated.
Did you say this thing has 373,000 miles on it?
Thank God. It saved me a lot of money.
That's phenomenal.
That's awesome.
And you know what? It gets 20 on the highway.
That's a big truck, too, to get that kind of mileage.
Good job, man.
It's nice to drive. It's nice to run. Ford did a great job.
Well, call us in another 100,000 miles, will you?
Yeah.
I'll call you back at 500. How's that?
There you go. Thanks a lot for the call. Our guest today is Gordon Fricke. Our phone number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Zach, our engineer's not listening. Maybe if I say shin, he'll listen. We're going to take a break. Shin, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back with a...
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, and houses, heated bird baths, binoculars, nature jewelry, gifts, toys, and games, where people and nature come together. WildBirdJunction.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And from Interim Healthcare for 46 years, providing home care for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses, serving the greater Capital Region, Columbia, and Saratoga counties, as well as Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And boy, the phone lines have not stopped. Gordon, we'll do two quick emails and then back to the phones we'll go. This one is from either Amy or Ami. And either way, I'm sorry. This person is from Hoosick Falls.
Oh, wow.
Perhaps you know Amy or Ami. My family's leaving the country for 6 months and leaving two cars behind. Our plan is to have someone start the cars once a week and move them back and forth a little. Should that be sufficient? One is a 2001 VW Golf manual. One is a 2006 Subaru Outback automatic.
Wow, boy, that's a good question.
Yeah.
And it's not advisable to be starting them up once a week and just doing little things like that.
Really?
The vehicle really needs to be fully warmed up and ideally driven, or you put it away and don't touch it till you come back. What does the email say, Ray? I know you just threw it away. 6 months they're going to be gone for?
I got to fish it out of that.
Man, sorry. I do that all the time to you.
Dirty run. Okay, we are leaving for 6 months.
Okay.
And leaving two cars behind.
I would almost have them be driven more regularly.
What, around the block? Or how far?
Yeah, well, then, of course, that brings you into other issues. So they drive it in a salty snowstorm, and now the car is sitting there rotting. You know, I'm of the thought of putting some fuel stabilizer in it, bringing the tires up to max pressure, and you should take the battery out or put a tender or a trickle charger on it, and then don't touch it till you come back.
Okay.
So I don't like the weekly startups because that may do more harm than good.
This one is from Daniel. I have an 06 Camry four-cylinder with 150,000 miles. I was told by a mechanic that since it has a timing chain, I don't have to worry about it. But how about the water pump? When and should it be replaced? And does a timing chain mean you don't have to change regardless of mileage?
Yeah, that's a good question. The timing chain is considered an internal component on that engine, and you really don't do anything with it. Maintain the vehicle properly, keep the oil change, and that timing chain can really last almost the life of the whole car or engine.
What about the water pump?
Water pump, like any other external water pump that's belt-driven, it'll give you signs when it needs to be replaced. It's going to start to leak. You're going to see drips or coolant on the ground, or it's going to make noises. So
yeah. All right. So don't until you
Either item you can not really be overly concerned with.
All right. Over to Dylan in Clifton Park. Dylan, you're next.
Hi. I have a 2009 Mazda 6, and outwardly there's nothing wrong with it. Not leaking fluids, recent oil changes, and it's getting completely garbage gas mileage around like 10 to 15 mpg when it should be getting around 30.
Wow.
Yeah. So is your check engine light on?
No. I've checked for codes. I've done spark plugs, oil change, air filter, tire pressures, all that kind of stuff, and nothing.
Wow. That's a significant drop.
Yeah, that's amazing that there's no check engine light or obvious. And I'm sure you did the air filter, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So a couple more things you can do that aren't going to cause a ton of expense. A mass airflow sensor reads how much air the engine is asking for. And that airflow...
I did that as well.
Did you clean that?
Yeah, I cleaned that, and I also got a new oxygen sensor.
Okay. What you should probably be checking for is, and I think this would have brought itself more to presence, but if you have any dragging brakes, any slightly sticking brake calipers or brake pads, that'll drag the car.
Yeah.
But you usually will notice hot smells, hot wheels, you know, something going on there that'll bring that to your attention. But you've hit all the usual things.
What about the type of fuel? I know in my wife's Nissan, for the first couple of months, I put regular in it.
Yeah.
And it didn't get the best mileage. And then I saw right on the thing. I wasn't even looking. This takes premium.
Yeah.
Mileage got better.
Yeah, definitely. And the Mazda 6 runs on regular gas.
Yeah.
They do, the fuel companies winterize the gasoline right about now. I think December 1st they start
but
that.
But not to the tune of 20 mpg.
No, it won't kill the car that badly. You will get poorer mileage in the winter, but not that drastically.
Huh.
I've also been getting this problem for a while before they winterized the gas. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good one.
It would be good to get the car scanned and go into it on the Mazda side, not the OBD2, which is quite generic, because there could be some codes in there that the OBD2 will not ever pick up.
And that won't throw a check engine light?
It may not turn on the check engine light, but you might see fuel trims out of whack. You might find that there's some evidence there or possibilities of why it's going through the fuel, but it needs a scan on an advanced scan tool.
Okay.
Hey, let us know what happens, Dylan. We appreciate the call, and let's go over to Donnie. And this one is going to be right up Gordon's alley. Donnie in Berlin, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Yeah. Am I on with Gordon?
Yeah.
You betcha.
It sounds like a voice from the past.
I've been on hold for a little while here. I've been driving from Scaticoke since I called you in.
Okay, man.
And I'm in Berlin now.
You're on.
I got a question about my Buick. I got a 68 Riviera,
yeah,
and it runs wicked hot. And I got to take it down. I'm going to drive it to Orlando, take the kids down to Disneyland, and I'm wondering,
yeah,
how do I keep it cool? I'm running the heater constantly,
yeah,
trying to keep it cool.
That
buddy of mine said I should take the hood right off it. Should I take the hood off the car?
Yeah, that vintage Riviera, 68 and 69, had a 430.
430.
Yeah, it had a 430,
yeah,
V8.
Right. I got a 430 big block in it.
Four barrel. And those engines had hot tendencies. I had a 69 when I was in high school. And when I was 17, 18 years old, my remedy was to drive the car with the hood off.
Ah.
So I think what
with
I would...
the hood off.
Yeah, I think what I would...
You want me to drive to Florida with the hood
off? No, that's a bad idea.
Why don't you... When you get as far as, let's say, Virginia, get the hood off the car.
That is ridiculous.
Store it somewhere and go down south with the hood off. And when you come home,
that dropped the temperature is my concern.
So you obviously know this guy.
I think this call is a bit of a setup, right?
All right, Donnie.
You didn't think I'd fly into that hood off scheme, do you?
Good luck there, Donnie. We appreciate the call. And over to Ken in Glens Falls. Ken, you're on.
How you doing? I have a 2008 Hyundai Elantra that I just picked up a couple months ago. It's a 5-speed, and shifting into second, third, fourth, even fifth, it feels like there's something sticking. It feels like there's something in the way of the gear shifter. Could that be a clutch issue, or is there something, a linkage issue underneath?
So it's actually moving the shifter in and out of the gears is what you're feeling is more difficult than usual?
Yeah, I mean, when I first test drove and everything, it was smooth as silk. And, you know, I drive about 500 miles a week. I live in Glens Falls. I work in Albany or whatever. And so it's all highway. Once I get up to speed, I'm fine. But it's just in the cities. I can push the clutch all the way down. It's a little bit smoother. Sometimes I'm sitting there, I have to kind of take it out and put it back in. And then it goes in. It's just an odd thing. In my last 5-speed, it's never happened, anything like that.
Let me ask you this. Do you ever, let's say you're at a complete stop, and you're in neutral, and you press the clutch down and go to put it in gear, do you have trouble getting it into first gear from a standstill?
Sometimes. Because it's starting to, it's kind of like I can push it. I either have to force it in where if something pops, or I just kind of back it off and put it back in, try it a second time, and then it goes.
Yeah. If you're trying to go into reverse, does it grind?
No.
No? Okay. It's possible that the hydraulic part of your clutch, and I believe that the Elantra has a hydraulically operated clutch. Most cars don't have clutch cables anymore.
This is an automatic or standard?
No, a stick shift car.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So I would be concerned about the condition of the hydraulics, the clutch master cylinder, which is basically behind your foot, and the slave cylinder, which is in the transmission or next to it. Those two units can start to bleed down and get lazy, and that gives you difficult shifting. Otherwise, making sure all the moving parts of the linkage are free and lubed would be the next thing to check.
It's not just a clutch issue?
Well,
replace the clutch?
Well, it could be. I don't want to ruin the guy's Christmas yet, though.
Well, I had that happen.
Yeah.
I had to replace the clutch.
It's possible. I wouldn't be throwing the clutch in yet, but I mean, it could be.
Okay.
Yeah.
I bought it with 133,000. This guy put 6,000 miles on it. So, like, the history behind it, you know, nobody's on the clutch, so it just may be due.
Oh, my God, that's the original clutch?
As far as I know.
Yeah, it very well could be, right, yeah.
136,000, that's overdue, isn't it?
Some clutches on good vehicles and good operators can last the life of the vehicle.
All right, Ken, are you a good operator with a clutch?
Yeah, I don't really go crazy. It's my commuter car.
Okay.
You know, the people before that owned this, according to Carfax, it looked like it was always a computer car.
Yeah, okay. So you don't know. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck. We appreciate it. I hope it's not the clutch. That's not that terrible, though, yeah.
Clutches aren't cheap anymore.
No?
Oh, you can be into over 1,000.
No way.
Up to 2,800 on some vehicles.
Really?
Clutches are not a walk in the park anymore.
You know, you mechanics get you going and coming. I tell you what. Let's go to Elaine in Amherst. Elaine, you're on.
I have laryngitis.
Okay.
I hope you can hear me.
Thank you for being on the radio.
Okay. My question had to do with battery. My car was very difficult to start after being out in the cold for a few days. It finally turned over, and it was fine ever since. But I had the battery checked, and they said to change the battery. So the question is, and the last time I had a battery installed was November 2012.
Okay, so 2012. So that battery is getting close to timing out just by what we see in this part of the country. 3 to 5 years is about it.
Really?
Yeah, some will make it 5 to 7, depending on the vehicle and the battery. I've seen some last 9 or 10, but that's extraordinary, and I've seen some go 2 or 3. So you're close to being in that range. Does the car get driven every day?
Pretty much, except when it was very cold.
Yeah, I mean, if it sits for 3, 4, 5 days a week, all cars draw a little bit of current from the battery when they're not being operated. It's called parasitic draw. The computer, the clock, the radio memories, all the modules in there stay alive. So after 2 weeks, some cars may not start well. After a month, a lot of cars will not start without a jump, and that's normal. So you may be on, you may be needing a battery.
Well, I did replace the battery, but I don't know. It's a matter of it measured 346 CCA.
Yeah. Yep.
And rated at 550 CCA.
Yeah, so so that was getting below the spec of the battery. So it was definitely getting tired.
Okay. It looked like a messy battery that should have been whatever corrosioned.
They didn't clean up the area?
No.
You want to make sure those contacts are clean.
Yeah, and batteries do gas. You know, they leave an acid film in a big mess. Yes, they do need, if they're bad from all that gassing, they should be cleaned up for sure.
Okay, good luck, Elaine. What did I do in the old days when that happened?
Baking soda.
Oh, that's right. Baking soda would do it. Yep. All right, over to Joanne in Northampton. Joanne, you're on.
Hi, I'll try to be succinct with this. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a 2006 Subaru Outback Impreza Sport. And for the last 3 years, only in the winter this problem happens, as I am driving along, it happens first thing upon driving, especially if it's first time in the morning, that my car at certain speeds will pause, a large pause in acceleration. It happens in a split second, it seems, and then a great big boom happens. It used to sound like a backfire. Now it sounds like a big booming, clunking, like something's going to fall out of the car sound. It's loud. I maintain my car regularly. Everything has been done. All the maintenance has been on schedule or even early. Everything is up to date, oil change, everything. The first year, I thought maybe it was a vapor lock, so I put in dry gas on a few refills. And for some reason, it seemed to help, but then it came back again.
Yeah.
I've had this researched by various garages. No one can make it happen when they're driving it. Because by the time I get there, I think my car has warmed up. I think warming up has something to do with it.
Yeah.
Because if I am bad for the environment and I let my car run for an extended period of time before I leave the driveway, it is 90% or more less likely to happen.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's something to do with warmth. They say they can find nothing wrong within transmission. Can you help me with an answer?
Well, this is what I would do, because it seems to be the transition from cold start to warm up is when you experience this problem.
Yes, and it's about speeds about 25 and 35.
Yeah.
It used to even happen up to at 55, but that seems to stop now because it takes me about 7 minutes to get to the highway.
Yeah.
So this is
what I would do. I would get the computer scanned, as we spoke earlier with another caller, with a more advanced scanner that will go into Subaru instead of OBD2 generic.
Right.
Just to see if there's some codes in there lurking that you can't extract with a
department. Can you tell me what scan that is with Subaru again? Because that's where I've been taking it regularly.
Oh,
okay. Well,
and they have checked it and can't find any problem with it.
If they just go in there and check for any codes with their equipment, which I'm sure they've done, I would hope, sometimes you'll get a strange code that will lead to a problem. But this is what we always resort back to is condition of the fuel and the condition of the intake valves and deposits.
Yeah.
And we like to advise running a super strong, potent fuel injection additive that goes in the gas tank. And Chevron makes one called Techron. And they make it in a big.
Could you spell that for me?
Chevron is the company, and
Chevron,
their product is called Techron.
All right, Joanne, we are done here. Wow, some
that was
show.
A
we
big
left a lot
show.
Of people on the line.
Yeah.
So, is your Christmas shopping all done?
Almost.
Good.
Almost.
Don't you speed when you're driving to the store, Gordon
no.
Fricke. Thanks for being here. Have a great holiday. Support comes from 10,000 Villages, located in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, Main Street, Northampton, and Lee Premium Outlets, offering fairly traded holiday gifts and jewelry from around the world. 10,000villages.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, offering design-build services that feature passive solar and energy-efficient designs, supporting the local economy using local materials. Prefabricated house kits also available. Noble-home.net. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin. Jane Iredale retail shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington, janeiredale.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants in Hudson, New York, offering selections for holiday meals, gifts, and everyday wines. Curbside service and delivery available. Raise your glass, hudsonwines.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for all the calls, and my sincere apologies if we didn't get to you. Hey, well, you know, Gordon will be back. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Deb Malik took your calls. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Food Friday, an Italian Christmas special. Oh, break out the Alka-Seltzer, boys and girls.